talk about anything without pressing record.
well, we were not starting, and then I was asking. So you oftentimes, and by often I mean maybe, you know, three times, which just seems frequently for the material. I actually it's fun. But you have these diagrams of how a bill gets made, so to speak.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Is this the show?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
I'm recording.
Everything that's in the show is in the show.
Okay, right.
Okay.
So we have this diagram of how... Let's say what the diagrams are, because I'll butcher it otherwise. Well, it's...
This fascinates me. I mean, I am actually paid money to kind of help do this. I don't do it, you know, on my own thing. So I work at the UK Parliament, and one of the things that is being done there is yet another attempt, but a proper attempt, a successful attempt to domain map Parliament, and it is as bonkers as it sounds. And I try to help people think about things while they're doing that, and in a relatively minor way. And I have loads and loads and loads of questions about it, which goes from amusing to irritating quite quickly. Mm. So I very often go into a layer above the layer that people think they want to talk about. So quite often I'm thinking about things which a lot of people in the room think either aren't worth thinking about or aren't our problem. Yes. So I'm a great person to have in a room for 3 or 4 hours with a massive whiteboard while I ask people stupid questions. But I find it very, very interesting because my grasp of this is relatively weak, but the whole idea of, and I noticed you took a photo of someone doing event storming.
Which is a similar presentation on technique.
Yeah. And I find all of these things very, very interesting because they still seem to be areas of contention. So they're not like, hey, we do this now. It's not like Prince 2 or ITIL or Agile or whatever. It's still questioning and questionable. And I like that. So the domain mapping stuff, it's, well, are we mapping, these are the things I ask myself, are we mapping entities? Are we mapping process? Are we mapping offices? In the old days, it would be offices and people, flowchart stuff. And thank God we've left all that behind. But the entity mapping is really interesting and also really weird. Because as soon as you start doing entity mapping, like, you know, what the things that you do your business with, you very, very quickly get into situations where anyone is looking at those diagrams and looking at it and thinking, what the hell is this? This is ridiculous. Why are we doing this? And you think, whoa. Before you change anything, let's just map what we have now and use that as an input to a change process rather than beginning to map the internals of an organization and immediately thinking, oh, this is terrible. We've got to change this.
Yeah. So I suppose that is starting at the end and then going all the way back up eventually. I mean, what you just identified, I think, must be one of the problems that let's call them change people. I don't know if change is the right word, but the problem you encounter is one, getting people to just like baseline the process that they have, which seems like ridiculous, right? It would be like if I just woke up, I'm in Singapore, and like I could diagram out my morning routine. And for me, that sounds like it would be delightful because I like those kind of things like yourself. But normally people would probably say, that's ridiculous. I just wake up and I have breakfast and then I put on my top hat and I sit on the train with the other people and read my newspaper and go to work. But, you know, there's all these steps. Now, that said, well, there's that part there. But like so how often do you do this sort of, I'm calling it baselining, but this sort of like, let's figure out what the process you do actually is. And then how often do you get like a reaction like, whoa, I had no idea that I do that much stuff or that we do these things. Like it must be some, unless someone like doesn't want to waste their time doing it. I would imagine it's sort of revelatory of like all these things that they do. I mean, it's similar to what I'm told is one of the initial effects when you do a value stream map with someone. They're, I remember I saw, or maybe I was just talking to Damon Williams. Is it Damon Williams? It's too early for me to remember people's names, but he's this big wheel in the DevOps world. And he was telling me he'll do value stream mapping. And one time there was this executive who looked up at the board and he was like, whoa, there's a whole lot of stupid up there. And I don't know, does it happen a lot where people see a lot of stupid? Or maybe they get impressed and they're like, we're doing a great job. We're nailing it.
I would say 95% of any feedback is neither of those. So there can be a bit of, hey, wait a minute, why do we have to go around that cycle again during this process? That seems weird. There's also the revelatory stuff, but it quite often we won't necessarily be speaking with people who have responsibility for a very large business. So they'll be looking at their bit and the inputs and outputs, and they'll think, well, yep, we are here to validate you've got it broadly correct. But 95% of it is quite often, it's a bit like stepping back away from local process and seeing global process and not being upset about it, but just looking at it and thinking, I honestly think some people that we work with look at it and think to themselves and say, hey, this is pretty big. Not like we are impressed, but we are part of a concerted effort to do stuff. And obviously we're not a business, we're not cranking out widgets. But the stuff the thing you said particularly about change, it's interesting because that to me, because that capital C change concept to me is relatively new in the past, say, decade or something. That concept that someone might want to change things within an organization on purpose. Because previously the model is basically, hey, people aren't buying our cars anymore. Maybe we should do something about that. But the idea that an organization can look at itself and examine itself and say to itself, we should stop doing these things and we should start doing these other things. And it hasn't, I don't think we've squared the circle yet, as it were. And I still think as organizations are thinking of that as internal conflict. I just stopped talking now.
Oh, that's good. That's my cue, you know. Well, there's a lot of
Normally,
exciting
this is around.
that's right. No, there's a lot of exciting topics in there. And you know, I think as far as stopping talking, there was a point in my wife Kim and I's communication where how did it was obviously some sort of negative situation going on, but I think what would she do? She would be talking to me trying to communicate, and I wouldn't be saying anything. It was a good like 3 to 5 years where I just, you know, I hadn't learned to talk. And she would just stop talking and she would just wait for me to participate in the conversation. And eventually, unlike me, she didn't do it in a sarcastically funny way. But eventually, sometimes she would just stop and say, I've just stopped to see if you're going to talk. And so it was a good
It's your
tactic.
contribution.
You know, I forget about that phase of our communication life a lot where like I was what did she was upset, rightly so, that I was neutral on everything. This is the neutral phase where I was just, you know, just sort of like, I don't know, it's six and six of one and half a dozen of the other or whatever. Anyhow, Yeah, you know, there is that notion. You went all the way to the abstract land there. But it is
I did.
this idea that we should be striving to improve, and at least is the way I would put it, right? And I think I read a lot of the literature, as it were, which is to say, business books, because I don't actually all this stuff that people
Trades.
that I talk with people about, I don't actually do any of that. I just read about it and talk to people. I'm like the worst type of a academic scholar of these things, where I'm just studying what other people do instead of actually doing it, like that old maxim. And you read, and by you I mean me, I read.
Telling them they're wrong.
That's right. You're wrong according to these books that I read. Which is to say, all you had to do is read all that C2 wiki, and then you can just like build a
Oh,
multi-decade career telling people they're wrong.
yeah, which is now terrible.
Oh yeah, that wiki, I'm
Have you
sure it
seen
is.
it?
No, I've logged onto it every
Federated
now
Wiki
and
stuff.
then.
It's bad.
Yeah. There's so many
It used to
pieces.
be great. It used to
Yeah.
be just like, oh, Wiki.
There's so many pieces of content that are like that out there on the internet, where I think if you spent like a good 2 to 5 years, you could extract a 300-page book that was helpful, which sounds like a wonderful use of time. So you read the when I read the business literature, as it were, I think the last time there was this big idea of change is important, and I think you kind of alluded to it, was in the, let's say, early 90s. And I vaguely
Yes.
remember the early 90s. This is the era I was in Tokyo, as they say. You got to say Tokyo, not Tokyo. It's that English. I don't think y'all have this problem, but this propensity in American English to just insert vowels in the middle of words. We have
Oh, I see.
this
Right.
aversion of consonant and of too many consonants together. I want to say
Yeah.
Tokyo, not Tokyo. Tokyo sounds
Tokyo.
weird. Anyways, I took Japanese a long time ago, which I totally cheated my
Oh.
way through, so I don't really know any
Oh.
Japanese. Yeah,
You disappoint me.
I know, I know. I had this great technique. I had a three-ring binder that had
Yeah.
a clear sleeve on the front of it, so you could like insert papers. Like if you imagine, you've got
Oh,
the
yeah.
the Jenkins report or whatever. And so I would put
I don't like the way this is going.
I put the vocabulary sheet we had for that week
Oh, dear.
on the front of that, and then I would put the binder on the bottom floor of my desk, so I could like look down and figure out what the answers were. That's the only way I
Oh,
survived
dear,
Japanese.
dear, dear.
I don't know. I think I got
Dear, oh,
the
dear.
statue of limitations, to make a funny word phrase that hasn't expired. So, anyways, I was in Tokyo, and it was in the early 90s. R The reason I took that is in the air was this idea that the Japanese were going to take over. So, for some
Yes,
reason,
I remember.
I thought I'd needed to learn Japanese. And so you had all this process improvement, and it's fun to read these old books, because what they're freaking out about, they often summarize as globalization. And I think what they
Yes.
mean is, well, pr what they mean precisely is two things. One, there are other, it's always, I mean, I guess you divide it up by nations. There's other nations that now have the wherewithal of skills and capital, which is to say money, to basically enter business with the same strength that American businesses do. And I guess some
Yes, yeah.
European businesses as well. Western, let's say Western. And then also, so you've got competition from the Japanese. And then also you have new markets that they can sell into, that you can sell into as well, but they're also competing with you. And this is this is back when the Japanese like owned skyscrapers in Manhattan. I forget which ones they
Oh,
owned. Everyone was
yes,
freaking out. So
The Nakamoto Plaza.
there, yeah, I don't know what that is, but man, it sounds intimidating, right? And
Is
like,
Die Hard?
oh, that's right, German bearer bonds.
Yes. Ooh, good times.
That was a very globalist movie in
Yeah,
retrospect, I guess.
it
What a strange movie that was. It's like a movie.
it really was. Now I have a machine gun.
Yeah, just an
Very
air
strange.
a movie from a different time. But I think you're right. Like despite all the agile software development stuff and all these other things, like I feel like, and even now in the era of digital transformation, I don't think in the mainstream we're quite at that point where there is this this fervency, if that's a word, of so much change management. So, you know, I think abstractly, that's the most interesting thing of diagramming, is sort of like this notion that we want to change and improve, and in order to do that, first we need to improve ourselves and know what we're doing. But it is I don't know. It's hard to figure out getting people interested in that, but it seems like a diagram is a good way to get into it, because then at least you know, I don't know, what you have, essentially.
Well, how did you phrase it? Incremental improvement. Incremental improvements.
I don't think I said that, but that's what I should have said.
That kind of thing, I think that the concentration on that, I think, is valid, but the focus is too narrow. Because there's always those stories of the kind of lean people going into hospitals and going around with the thread and all that sort of stuff, which is fine, but it's too narrow focused. It's like focusing on one, I would suggest, surprisingly small area of a business or organization that in the past we would have called efficiency or something like that. And I know this sounds a bit hand-wavy. It sounds a bit James G. But if you step back away from mere efficiency and you think, how are we treating our staff? How are we retaining and recruiting people? Are we, you know, working ethically? All that sort of stuff. That is all improvement as well. And I think there's been an improper separation between the supposedly money making efficiency and everything else to do with how the business exists and exists in the future. But the diagramming stuff, there's a few of us who are involved in that, and there's a really interesting kind of push and pull dynamic in that. The whole process is going from thinking, conversation, big bits of paper, smaller bits of paper, whiteboard, omnigraphal of all things, and then someone's writing turtle, like n triples, and then we go into a whole new world of graph database schemas and stuff like that.
Turtle. And what is turtle? Yeah. Like programming?
You remember N3, N triples?
Mm-mm.
In RDF.
Is this back to tuples?
So it's a kind of shorthand. Yeah. It pretty much tuples, yeah.
Okay. Because, you know, back before the time I was cheating at Japanese, I think turtle was a programming language. It was the first programming language when I was in second grade. I forget how old that would be. And you would use turtle turtle around the screen.
You are thinking of logo.
Logo. Yeah, because you had a turtle that you would
use. Yeah.
So wait, you haven't been programming logo in rooms?
No. No. Left 10, right 5.
Exactly. That was so exciting.
Oh. All the essentials. Isn't that a crazy idea? It's like, okay, we need a programming language. What are we going to do? It's not like Hello World or write a wiki. We're going to make this turtle move around the floor and draw lines.
You know that is, we'll go back up the stack here quickly. But that is when my son was in a supposed STEM academy. I shouldn't say supposed. They actually did like engineering and things like that. They had a interesting curriculum, but there was some iPad programming thing called Scratch Junior, I think, like this combination of a. What do you call the type of video game that's Mario Brothers, where it's like a 2D?
Oh,
like there's a name for that. That's like a 2D thing where your character is always going to the right, basically. Anyways, it was a combination of that and like IFTTT, where you would like.
Oh yes.
Or not even not IFTTT of like what's now called shortcuts, where you would take these visual blocks. Yeah. It's kind of like boxes and arrows, and you would string them together. Yep. Anyhow, so it's actually very similar to Logo. That's an interesting theory that one of the ways to start learning program is to do spatial things, is to move stuff around on the computer. But
Yes.
anyhow, back to Turtle.
Yeah,
So,
back to Turtle. So, I was also, now you've made me think, and we're terrible with this. I'm the worst, but we are both bad at this about the bouncing around. Because I was thinking, for what purpose are people learning computer languages now?
It's like
And
why I
one of the
learned
reasons
Japanese. The computers are going to take over.
or something. And one of the reasons that makes me think about that is that I always separate programming as a whole into kind of big boring programming and small interesting programming. Big boring programming basically meaning JavaScript now. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but it's kind of like massive mainstream stuff. And the small interesting programming are things like the various Lisps and things like Faro and Squeak and things like that, which I look at and I think, these are weird. These are such, because the ideas are sufficiently different, I think, to be worth re-examining, to go back and think, this is a really interesting tool. It's not like these other tools. It's not a sort of hammer. But yeah, the turtle stuff is basically going from boxes and arrows to an ontology or a vocabulary or whatever we're going to call it of one of these has two of these, and this is contained within that, and that kind of stuff, basically. But we're going from that to a big overarching general ontology for Parliament. All of this is on GitHub, amazingly, where we have a graph store where everything is, all the instances of the information is in that graph store, which is fascinating, but I'm a mere dabbler in this stuff. But it's nice to be involved in it. I really enjoy it.
So it seems like you would be in a position to be the you probably have a name for it over there in the parliament system, but I forget what they call it in the in Congress. But there's one person who I assume is supported by a staff who they have to ask what's the process, and they're sort of like the lawyer for like running process things through.
Well, this is really difficult. Difficult because I used to think about the kind of rules and things like that, like organizational rule sets, and then I thought they were a bit like games. So there's sort of automatic games like mazes. So you just start at one point and go through to the end, and then there's sort of rule set games like chess, and then there's open games like football or baseball or something. Football, really. Soccer. So, what sort of organization are you in? And a lot of people imagine, well, there's these rules and we follow the rules. And I don't think that's really true. So, with my organization, the idea is that at any times the rules can change. And for a long time, I was thinking, hey, this is what makes us different from a lot of other places. But now I think everywhere's like that. Everywhere has this supposed rule set. And everywhere doesn't actually have to follow the rule set. So, I mean, most people do most of the time, but it's a bit of a kind of fiction to think, oh, we're all doing this because we're all doing this. And I think, well, we're not really. We wrote the rules.
That's my favorite recent
So if
concept, which I haven't tested out in the customer service area. When did this happen last? Like we went down to Portugal for a vacation, and I rented a car because you need a car for like if you're going to, it's not rural, but it's like we're not just going to Lisbon or one city. We're going down to a place where there's you got to need get have a car to get around, and I rented the car, and of course, the person who drives the car has to like be there to authorize someone else to drive the car. So I had signed up for it, but I wasn't going to be there for a week. So Kim was going to drive the car, which is it's a policy ruins everything. And of course, it's this company Hertz, and you can tell they haven't updated their software since I don't know when, somewhere in the mid 2000s. It's very weird software. I bet now that I think of it, I bet it's running on like SAP or Oracle, and they're constrained by like the workflow that's in there. because it's not good.
You're starting to feel sorry for them, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. But anyways,
Those poor guys.
that's right. As far as someone, and it's someone who's sort of like the agent of this mindset. Someone acting in the maze mentality where we just sort of deterministically follow these rules.
Yes.
It's a good instance that they could be in an open game. So I have to like
Yeah.
I can't just add her to this, of course. And so I have to cancel the reservation and then set up a new reservation that's in her name. And then it's their policy for some reason that they can't really like refund you the money. Well, they can refund you the money, but there's a penalty that you pay, which is a weird concept in that
Right.
area. Like, why am I paying a penalty just to return this? Well, which gets to the point. So I've discovered that you can chat with customer service people instead of being on the phone, which is great. And so I was explaining the situation to them, and they're the ones who told me I had to do this. And they're like, "Oh, sorry, you can't just add her. You know, you're gonna have to cancel her." And then the difference at the end of the day was it was basically like, I don't know, 80 or 100 euro more that we would have to pay, plus the rate had gone up. And I was chatting with them, and I'm like, "Can you do something for me?" I didn't say, "Can you do something for me here?" But it's just like, "Yeah, I just made a mistake, and so can you like, give me some money." Basically, now get
Yes,
just to
I'd
like
like
make up the
that.
difference, right? Like, can I rent it under the same rate or whatever? And then they were just like, "Oh, well, that's not our policy to do that." And then I was, as I think so often, I was like, "Well, yeah, but you make the policy, so why don't you just change it?"
You could still do it.
Yeah, and it's exactly what you're saying is like I don't think most people. It's always weird how organizations,
You could still do it.
how our organizations just operate under this assumption of like we have the policy,
Get it.
and we can't like oh it constrains us, and then you're like yes, but who made the policy, right? It's not like there's some deities who are casting down this thing that you must do. And it does seem like that is often going back to the business literature. That's this thing, this concept you've hit on. It's something the authors are always trying to instill into the business people is like, you could just make stuff up. Like you could just decide that new things are going to be done. And then also they always want to instill that down the chain of like individuals working on things, they should be able to do things too. And
Yes,
then
empowerment.
to round it out, and then I'll be the silent one. Like it's interesting. There's a reoccurring one of the reoccurring companies that comes up as a paragon of change in the old literature is which one is it? Some hotel chain like the Ritz-Carlton or whatever, or the Four Seasons. It's the Four Seasons that always comes up, and they're always like every individual at a Four Seasons is empowered to do the right thing for the guest. And so like if the guest some problem comes up, the Four Seasons staff is trained to just think outside the box. And it seems like why aren't all staff trained to do that? Like why is that such a in a service oriented business like hotels, isn't that like the point?
Yes, isn't that what you do?
Yeah.
Well, it's that there is also that narrative of the tale of even if you take something like Apple, this idea that each division has no problem cannibalizing the work of other divisions. So if you think the iPad people, of course they want to eat the MacBook sales or whatever it is. And again, with other organizations and companies, this idea that, well, 90% of your company is boring and old-fashioned, and 10% of your company is going to be this challenging internal startup, radical, all that kind of stuff, and it's going to challenge your internal systems. And you just think, whoa, 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 wait a minute. Why is it necessary to set up this internal rift within an organization in order to get all of the organization into a better place? It's such a strange idea. It's like having a chain of restaurants and then saying, we want to increase the hygiene rating for the restaurants, but we're only going to do it with two of the restaurants, and the other 40 are going to have to like suffer. And it's an odd idea, this idea of internal competition as a necessity rather an internal competition as a choice. And I'm not saying it has no worth whatsoever, but it's an odd idea to you know, only address 1 out of 10 of your troops and you know, say where you're going to go. But the modeling stuff that I am with, I find it quite challenging to think about, because it's a combination of different things. And I don't mean I am clever because I can load it all into my head. I am saying I am probably normal because I can't. And once you get to a sufficiently complex system of systems, I do not find it possible to sit there and load 3 ontologies into my head. It's not doable. So the idea of, well, okay, how do you advance a system like that? I don't think you have to be brutal. I think you have to be a surgeon.
The process surgeon.
You have to know what you're doing.
Yeah. Tell me if it kind of plays it. Speaking of systems, it seems like the system of discovering the system you have is like, first let's figure out what we do, like process something out. And then something you keep hitting on, which I think is interesting and maybe informs this, how do I deal with all this, is like, so why are we doing all of this? What are we doing here? Which for most people, I am frequently this person as well, where I'm just like, fuck, I don't want to talk about why we're doing this. I just want to talk about doing it. like I don't want to talk about these abstract notions of why are we doing this and what is the point of everything. But I think maybe in the process that's a valid question, because then what you start getting to is, if you're going to be operating in the incomprehensible system of systems, you need like a simplistic set of principles that you're acting on that sort of help you inform why we're doing something, and should we be doing this step, like does it contribute to the overall thing.
I honestly think this is absolutely key. I think the first step in writing a strategy is, do not write a strategy. Just don't do it. Don't ever write a strategy ever. And that idea of kind of 3 guidelines to be able to say to an organization, within an organization, so it's 100 people or 1,000 people or 10,000 people, okay, here are our 3 things for the next financial year. We're going to have a real intranet, we're going to concentrate on security, and we're going to cut prices. That's it. Nothing else. No kind of mission statement, no big outreach or anything like that. You need something, I think, you need something that is simple enough not to have to be written down, and that every single person within the organization can vaguely align themselves with. And so any meeting you go into, you can say, hey, is this meeting supporting one of our 3 guidelines, our 3 kind of broad objectives? If not, I don't have to be here. I'm out. If we're not talking about one of those 3 things, this is not what we do. And I think a lot of the time, that idea of what do we do immediately goes up into the stratosphere of, hey, we're making some, no. We're 4 people in an office. 4 people in an office. What do we do? What are we going to do? What's, you know, that idea of what's good look like? How are we going to earn our money this quarter? And it doesn't have to, I really don't think it has to be one of those kind of spiritual goals. Because people aren't buying that. And I don't mean that you only sell what you think people are going to buy, but you have to be able to communicate, as you say, you have to be able to communicate to get the money, basically. No one's going to pay you for stuff they don't understand.
Goals, that like
goals.
Yeah, I have been thinking a lot recently about how I could apply this idea of goals to my life. Like the filtering you're going through, right? Like
Yes.
This is something I'm not going to do because it doesn't contribute to either to mix it up in my personal life, establishing a good intranet, or being or being more secure, or cutting
Yes.
costs.
Yes.
So
Yes.
then let's see. We'll go back to the diagram. So you got a diagram up there, and like, so what's the process you've gone through to, like, how do you extract that out? Do you do I think the word you use for that nowadays is some kind of storming. You're doing some sort of storming, which sounds I don't know. That sounds
Yeah.
like some sort of, what was the name of that thing that George Bush Senior did? Desert Storm? You're doing some sort of storm, which
Yeah.
sounds kind of
Norman.
yeah, Stormin' Norman. So is like, how do you,
Stormy
like, you
Snorman.
got a blank board. How do you start with your room full of people focused on the internet security and cost cutting?
Well, this is, well, in that particular instance, we are at the moment not doing that. We're doing what I keep on thinking of as entity mapping.
Right,
So,
right,
what are
right.
the things that
I
we
didn't mean to
do
constrain
the
it to
work
internet
with?
stuff. I was just, never mind
Oh,
that part.
no. Yeah, but I was trying to put it apart from goals. So it's still
Yes.
that area of yeah, what do we have on our desktop now? Don't worry about what it is. Don't worry about whether you think it's good or bad or whether it's going to change or not change. But just what are we actually dealing with? And the a lot of the time that sounds kind of dull, but even with that stuff, where you see it when you are able to map it all out and show it, not kind of not for any critical reason, but just to put it down on a piece of paper and to be able to say, well, wait a minute, we've got this process here and we've got this process here, and they're kind of the same. That's it. Really kind of quite boring observations about a lot of it, and not doing anything about those observations other than simply recording them separately. And a lot of this is to do with the move from relational data stores to graph data stores.
Oh boy.
So everything is, yeah, exactly. Ring the bell, ding. Graph data. He said it. He said it again. So we have a graph data store. It's running. It's there. It works. And we've got some very clever people keeping it all ticking over. And the whole thing is a series of this.
If I can just footnote, if I can just footnote, one of the things I find encouraging and fascinating about this ongoing work you do in this area is you're just like, why don't we slow down technology like shiny object people and just really nail this like RDF ontology thing, which one way of thinking about it is, you could say in a cynical way, which I don't intend to, is like you're sort of stuck in the what did they call it? The internet of internets. What was the phrase for all the RDF stuff? There was a word for that. The web of things? No, it was the but
The
I think
web
it's
of
the web. There was a New York Times article written about it at some point, and I think that's right when it started to
wasn't the
decline.
web of data, was it?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a web of, I don't know. Anyways, but it's encouraging that you're always like, why don't we finish that project before we go on to like this other
Yeah,
thing?
yeah,
And
yeah.
anyways,
Yes.
as they say in
But it's.
if you listen to this book, consider the lobster, that David Foster Wallace uses a lot of footnotes, and
Yeah.
as they say, end footnote.
Right, okay. So that whole process is flexible and expands and contracts, and the people I am working with doing the work are kind of similar but kind of different in that they have their own specialities and their own focus and that kind of stuff. And it's interesting and useful to have different views. And I am going to tell myself it's interesting and useful for me to be there to ask stupid questions like, wait a minute, are we mapping the procedure here? Or are we mapping the things made by procedure? Or are we mapping the views that people have of their bits, that kind of thing? And it's With the particular organization that we are working in, I often ask the question, are we mapping Parliament or are we mapping what Parliament does?
Ooh,
and
that's exciting.
Yeah.
Like the, as you say, the entities,
yeah.
Like, do you mean like, are we mapping the entities in the state, or are we mapping like the process and the like execution that goes on that they follow? Is that the distinction?
Exactly. And this is that the particular one I was thinking about. And we do have that, again, looking at these domain maps, so let's call them diagrams, basically, there are shifting views about exactly what sort of diagram they are. I mean, is it, and I've gone through this process of thinking, well, is it a state machine or is it like an electrical circuit? Or is it like a series of logic gates? And we're looking at those bits and putting them over the top and sort of laying them over the top and thinking, can we think of this as a series of logic gates? Or can we think of it in terms of classes and superclasses, that sort of thing? And it's this is the interesting thing for me, in that it's not obvious. It's not straightforward. And that's where I used to think it was separate from everything else. I used to think, well, because Parliament's sovereign and because any of them can decide to do whatever they want, whenever they want, there are no real rules. But as you say, you know, talking to the person in the hotel, there are no real rules, full stop. You know, there's the laws of physics, but everything else is kind of like up to us. But that's also one of the things that I keep coming back to about change, small c change, because this shift from relational data stores to graph data stores, I keep asking that question of how easy is it going to be to change this? So basically, how far back do we go have to go in the modeling and to make a change in the turtle or the RDF or whatever for it to be mirrored, for it to flow all the way to store and out to whatever, out onto the website? And I'm not entirely I haven't really made myself confident that I know how easy that's going to be, or even how it's going to work.
Right. It's sort of like there's a limitation of what you can do based on the database you use, which is a specific instance of like based on the technology you have, or in the broadest sense of technology, like it constrains what you can regularize. I don't know. That's another odd problem that you have, but then so like trying to maintain some thread here. So you've got your event storming, I guess. Is that how you're, how do you gather this stuff? Yeah. You just sort of like ask people and facilitate that somehow?
Yes. And there's a sort of a loop backwards. So the stuff gets shown and then comes back and then shown and comes back. And we usually have, you know, business people in the room, or we'll go to business people, that kind of stuff. So it's relatively, it's not super, super granular, but it's grand extent we can get people to nod it through. But it's also a stage. We also have this interesting turnout in some instances of looking at things which exist in the domain and realizing that no one ever had a name for them.
Exactly.
So quite often that idea of what the organization is and what the organization makes or does, quite often people will work for years and years and years perfectly reasonably without giving a thing a name. So the thing, the object, the process or whatever does exist in the domain. So it's real, but no one's given it a name. It's just like there in people's heads or something.
But what's an example of that?
Well, this is a really touchy subject at the moment, because there's this this idea drifting into politics. There's this idea of this concept called a work package, which sounds so generic, which one part of the organization was like, all right, let's just call this bit of the process a work package. And we were carrying on like this until another bit of the organization said, whoa, 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 what the hell is this? Bug package? We've never heard of that. No, we just made it up. What do you mean you made it up? You can't just make stuff up. So now there is that revisiting of the language and saying, well, okay, we need to call this, this needs to have a kind of Kripke style name. Otherwise, bad things happen. Otherwise, we can't address it. We can't do anything with it. And then that has to be resolved before we go on. But in the past, a lot of these efforts didn't really mean as much as they do now, because in the past, we could, you know, the computer people could go to the business and say, we're going to make a diagram. And the business would say, yeah, sure, whatever. And then just not care about it.
The business was like, how? what can I do to get you out of my office?
But now we are making a diagram that is in Turtle, that is writing straight into the triples. So quickly, and again, this is why some of my more technical colleagues, where I say, look, that stuff in the triple store, is that Parliament? Is it a model of Parliament in the triple store? Or is it the data, or is it both?
Mm. That's sort of like the there's an ongoing idea and philosophy of humanity is like constrained or defined by the language it uses. Because if you can't if you can't name something and describe it, it's almost like you can't, it doesn't exist, and therefore you can't like do something about it.
Yeah, and it sounds abstract, but it's also not abstract in that you might think of your people working out, well, okay, what do we call shifts that change over time, or what do we call these groups of people, or what do we call this product, or what do we call this logistics system, or something like that? And people, you know, it seems odd to think about it. But particularly if you are presenting it in a particular way to people, then it does need a containing object, or it does need a name for a connection or a route from one thing to another. So that's something we're doing quite a lot of as well. But the ability to change it is something I keep coming back to, because in the past it was like, well, Robert, you're talking about a schema in a database, in a you know, SQL Server database. You don't get to change it.
Mm. But
we decided
like,
it.
Like you have to.
If you want to update the schema, then that's a failure.
You have to determine if Parliament is a relational database or a graph database. like what are they exactly?
yeah. And my feeling generally about it is I had this feeling about print first or web first publishing. I've got that feeling again now of either we're looking in the rearview mirror at relational data stores, or we're looking into the foggy future, at least into non-relational data stores. I mean, even if you don't say graph data stores, just non-relational data stores.
Mm.
And it's not clear. It's not clear. And the easiest thing to do would just be to stick with, okay, let's just do another schema and SQL will be fine. I don't think everything will be fine.
Yeah. I mean, you can't. Let's see. In a schema based database, the issue, maybe there's a lot of them, but in the context of this discussion, it seems like the issue is it's really hard to change it. Like, maybe if you could instantly change the schema, and then also the I think the hidden thing of why schema databases are difficult is you've got to go deal with all the data. Like, you've got to change all the data around and the rules around it, which is typically impossible to do in a pleasing way. And then let's say where pleasing is defined as it would be done
not losing money.
Yeah, well, there you go. It would be done quickly, and it could be done as represented by cost and like effort. It would be minimal cost and minimal effort, and the effort is usually like, I remember when we would want to change the schema around, it's just like this laborious process of figuring out, I don't even know what, but it's a lot of work. It's a lot of mental
Yeah,
energy.
backup and migration and
And then so
and at that
basically a schema database, it's almost not impossible, but it's too expensive to change. And so it lessens to ch change, and it's like a closed, it's not closed, but it's a very limited system, I guess.
Yes, and this we had a couple of meetings this talks this week about the open worldness of the graph store, which a weird thing to think about, particularly if you're in a room with people who have a DBA style background or a they're doing stuff in Rails or Node or something like that, and you're suddenly talking about, well, you can you, the triples we are using the graph store as a store of claims. So each it's literally a store of claims, and you can put whatever you want in the triple store as a claim, and the claim might be wrong. You might go from one object to two competing claims. So this entity here is in two physical places. And you think that, well, that can't be right. Well, then don't write it to the data store. And it's like silence for a couple of minutes while we'll think about that. And it's and that's the thing I keep pressing for in the work that is being done is what I keep calling model expression, which is we're not just trying to make a nice diagram, we're trying to make the thing be correct. So to properly reflect, to clearly reflect what the thing is, all the way from the conversation in people's heads, on the big piece of paper, on the small piece of paper, in the OmniGraffle, in the turtle, in the triple store, out to the data store, out to the database, out to the kind of post-internet interfaces.
Yeah, that seems fun. Oh no, my connection is poor. You said an interesting thing, which made me think that made me daydream a little bit, which was someone says you're trying to get them to put these claims or assertions in the system in your tuples, and people will say something like, "That's not accurate," and then your suggestion is, "Well, then let's not put it in there," which oftentimes I'm in sort of not one of these meetings, but I'm in a meeting where people are like, I'm often portrayed as like some. So, I have this affectation, like all of us type of people do, where they're like, "Oh, Michael Cote is this expert, and he will come help you out to solve your problems in, DevOps and change
No
management."
pressure.
Yeah, exactly. That's a skill to get over that. But at the end of the day, at the end of the day, at the towards the end of the conversation, people are exasperated, kind of like your room there, and they're like, "Ah, we've got to change and improve things, and here's the reasons why we can't do it." And it's just like this thing is holding us back. And if I've got a good feel of the room, I basically tell them like, one of my major principles is don't do dumb shit. So how about you just don't do that?
Absolutely.
If what you're telling me is that this is dumb shit and it's holding you back, this goes back to the Hertz thing. Like just don't do it. How about that? Pazow! And now here's my business card. I'm out.
Here's my invoice. First class. Well, I do think there's a lot in that of there's a it in the 80s and early 90s, there was that whole concept of presenteeism and, later on the kind of hero worker, the kind of Stakhanovite idea of, working however many hours a week, that sort of stuff. And this it would be great to be able to actually realize that idea of employing people as humans and helping them work smart rather than work hard. But we haven't yet developed that idea fully and or reflected it efficiently back into organizations. And that kind of local control and local knowledge is in so many instances being glossed over, where you should be able to say, okay, well, if that's a painful procedure for everyone to go through, How about not going through it? How about we don't have that board? Or how about we don't have this, you know, service agreement or SLA talk or whatever it is, and either do something else or just not do it? You know, if you're trying a particular process and it's not giving a positive outcome, okay, what's the goal? The goal is get the positive outcome. The goal isn't make the process work. And if it's not giving the positive outcome, just don't do it. I mean, something else will come along. It's not like we're going to run out of ideas or concepts.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like, I mean, just to get distracted yet again, hopefully momentarily, since you raise like SLAs and service contracts. I should try next time someone tells me that they're constrained by their outsourcer. I should pull out the old the fallacy of sunk costs and be like, well, yes. How about you just I know you're going to have to keep paying them millions of dollars, but how about you just ignore them and don't work with them?
Yes.
and like yeah. I think the sunk cost fallacy, there must be a positive version of it, but it is that's a major issue in organizations is they want to extract value out of something they've already paid for, even though it doesn't work. and so they're like,
even though it was rubbish.
Yeah. We have this outsourcing agreement that is not accomplishing the goals we currently have.
Yeah.
So let's keep doing it because we've paid for it already.
I bought this sandwich. It's disgusting. I will finish it.
It's exactly. I was going to make the same analogy of like, I paid for this meal and it's terrible, but I'm going to keep eating it.
Keep eating it.
Even though I have
bitter end.
Even though I have a wallet with money in it and I could buy something new, I need to eat this food because I paid for it. But yeah. It's fun. Like we keep circling back to this thing of like you draw all your boxes and arrows, and then the next task is like is that what we want? Like is this like this thing we've been doing the whole time? Is that should we keep doing that or not?
Yeah, there is that, and that's where I think it goes hand in hand with the requirement to have very malleable diagrams and you know, that kind of like, look, we're not writing out the org chart here. We're trying not to do a flow chart. We're trying to sort of draw out the map, draw out the territory in order for people to look at that and say what they want to say about it. And it could be fine. I mean, they could look at it and say, well, yeah, this looks fine. Let's just carry on like this for a while. But I don't want it to be a challenge. Because in the past, I think some of that has been an unnecessary and an unuseful supposed challenge back to the business of, hey, look, you people have really done goofed here. You should change this procedure or something. And, you know, you don't make friends that way. I mean, it's not a great idea.
I think maybe that's yet another conversation of what we do here in our occasional podcast. You've done goofed here. That's a great phrase.
You've done goofed. I usually reserve that particular description for something which is an absolutely colossal disaster. You've done goofed.
I'm typing that in. You've done goofed. Yeah,
you've done goofed.
You know, I've set myself up to like revisit this idea of what is what's an enterprise architect do in a sort of DevOps world. All those phrases. Enterprise architect is a good phrase, but this is my another ongoing concern. Speaking of diagramming, is I don't know what to call DevOps, digital transformation, agile. Software is eating the world stuff. There's no good name for all of that. We just say DevOps, which is totally a misappropriation of the phrase, according to some people. But other people, it means exactly what that nebulous thing is. But it seems like a lot of, in my mind, what you're describing is, you know, the organization wants to change. And a lot of what some role has to do is describe the system. And say like, all right, what are we going to change to? Like, here's how we operate now.
Yes.
And then how, like, what is the abstract idea of a box of how we do things now? And then an arrow of how we want to do things in the future.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And that is, I mean, that's always like a fun, delightful process if you're into that kind of thing, because you discover going through things. And I don't know, maybe that's a fair amount of what enterprise architects are trying to do, is like just describe the system so that you can sort of like nurture it on to the next state. And I imagine in a system like Parliament, another issue that you have, well, you have the issue you started with, is it's just like this big entity of a whole lot of people in it who in theory are sort of unconstrained in what they would want to do. They have to reach some sort of consensus, is the wrong word, but the body, the entity has to officially approve doing things in a new way, kind of, sort of.
Yes.
And so changing state is hard and requires a certain amount of consensus, but it is, I don't know, you're mapping out all these, I've lost my train of thought, so I'm trying to recover it here, but you're trying to like map out how do we want to operate and how do we want to do things. And a lot of it is, one, we've got to define the system. Like, so we have to go from a, I don't know, an autocracy, like a monocratic autocracy where there's just like one person determines what to do. And then we've got to change the system into a way that evolves. And then eventually, hopefully you get to the point where you're like, and then we should appropriate this money to send to this body. Like eventually you need to get to the part, kind of like this conversation, where you actually do something, right? Like something happens.
Yeah, something. I think the one of the interesting differences in this particular organization, it sometimes reminds me of like a really big old hospital, and the hospital might choose to run itself in a particular way, but it has to react to people coming in with whatever illness they come in with. Mm. And for us, for Parliament, Parliament at the moment can be seen as a container of things. So it's a notional place where elected representatives or whatever they are come together and legislate and do the business of legislation and that kind of stuff. And it's the relationship between Parliament as a corporate body and Parliament as made up of people is not straightforward and changes over time. So when you were saying change is hard, in a strange way we almost have the opposite problem of change is very, very easy and we have to keep up. So this is the weird organizational thing, is that Parliament needs to be able to, and it's not just Parliament, so other organizations are like this, Parliament needs to be able to, this particular organization requires extreme fluidity, which means that the systems supporting that need to react in a fluid way. I think that's the advantage of some of the technology, where the think need to think to take advantage. But I think it's the same in many organizations. I mean, like a hospital or you know, I keep thinking of hospitals, where you have a lot of inputs that is uncontrolled, then you have to have very dynamic systems.
Yeah, well, I think a hospital is a good example, right? Because its purpose is the wrong word. Well, whatever. The end goal or its purpose is something we can all understand, which is like making sure humans stay alive, right? We understand that, and then so it gives you, the patient, a high literal skin in the game. Like a highly invested interest in optimizing that process as much as possible. And then curing, you know, addressing sicknesses and bugs, so to speak, in human systems. We sort of inherently understand that, well, maybe we don't, but it's a complicated system that needs to be extremely open-ended as far as diagnosing and figuring things out. And then, as like that checklist person gets to, there are some set processes. You don't want it to be only open-ended, but you also want to be able to apply sort of rules and best practices. Anyways, it seems like a good analogy for something. And then also, I mean, it removes a bias of thinking about government, that people don't like government and it's terrible and it's all this stuff. Whereas really, like, you know, the government's just a body to like express how we want to be and what we want to do, and it, you know, which seems positive. But
Yeah. Better than the alternatives.
But that is why, like, you know, trying to round up a little bit, like, that is why, like, a boxes and arrows thing, like, even though it can seem constraining and really annoying, like, it's like a fun, optimistic process, because you're like, now we understand what we're doing, and we can bake into the system, like, doing interesting new things and like solving problems, and then therefore, like, I don't
Yeah,
know, being
definitely.
happy because
Yeah,
we've kind of set up a
completely.
system that we want.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's very important. That's a key part of it. And you know, if you're going through this process and you feel dragged down by it, I think there's something wrong.
That's sort of
How's the rest of
a governor to have on
yes,
this
an
whole
axiom.
process is like, so are we happy with what's going on here? And if we're
Yes.
not happy with it, maybe we should stop doing it the way that we're currently doing, or even stop doing it. Yes, facilitating. You know, that seems to be what
So how?
consultants do. They just facilitate things a lot. I make this joke, like, that there's a joke about consultants just look at your watch and tell you what time it is, and
Yes.
I often make the joke, like, well, if you could fucking do that, you wouldn't have to hire them. Right?
You done
You've
goofed.
goofed. Well, that man, there's
Speaking of
so many little cul-de-sacs to have gone down. You know, I've had this, speaking of revelations, I've had this epiphany recently that there's this thing called brainstorming, and that's what, if you want to like do things, you've got to, like, kind of like with this session that we facilitated, you've got to just brainstorm to come up with topics that you could do something about, that you could write about, and or do something. And it seems like a waste of time. But if you have some discipline to, as they say, capture all the topics, then you can come up with an infinite list of things to just sort of do, and you know, as long as you're not just subsisting and trying to make sure that you're doing some Maslow's hierarchy of taking care of things. See, which is a whole other topic. What do you do once you have a reliable food source and shelter? How do you pass the time? But anyhow,
Go
maybe
and
we
kill some
should.
mammoths.
That's kill some man. Maybe we should have our little a little lightning topic round.
Yes.
I was thinking that's a fun round that we do, because we demonstrate, or at least I try to demonstrate, that I can stay on topic and be concise, unlike what has just
Is
preceded
that
it.
what happens? Okay.
Wait, how about I usually drive it, but do you have any small questions that have 1 to 2 sentence answers?
All I've got is recommendations. You've tripped me up once again. I'm terrible at this. I can't keep up.
All right. Well, I'll ask you these little questions. As always, I listened to another Tyler Cohen podcast recently, and that it's my favorite part of the podcast, where he does his overrated, underrated things, which is a good
Oh
constraint system.
yeah.
But okay, so here's some questions in that vein. My understanding is that your belt should match your shoes. First of all, do you think this holds? Is this something you should follow, that if I wear a brown belt, I should be wearing brown shoes? If I'm wearing black shoes, I should be wearing a black belt.
As long as you're able to interpret match broadly enough. Because I think if it's like match, it doesn't it, honestly it doesn't look right now. It might have looked right in the past. It doesn't look right now.
Yeah, there's some fascinating thing to be thought of, so to speak, of things should match, but oddly enough, if the two things of the same color don't match exactly, they definitely don't match. Right? Like, if you wear a dark brown with a light brown, that's even worse than maybe wearing a black with a brown, which is,
Yes,
I don't know
definitely.
what that means, but I feel like that must be indicative of something about aesthetics, that it
Yes,
really,
yes.
like it's
Which we're
worse.
both great at.
Yeah, it's worse to barely match than it is to not at all match, which
Yeah,
is.
it's Uncanny Valley.
Oh, Uncanny Valley.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, all right. How about so Chinese slash Asian dumplings. Is that something you like eating?
This is an area I am completely out of my depth on because I know there are vegetarian dumplings, but and people have tried to point me to their preferred supplier, but I've not done it, and I would like some guidance.
Well, you've got those big doughy buns, I think they're called, right? I think I know at least three types of dumplings, and I guess I can think of a fourth. You've got the big doughy buns, which are stuffed with things, and they could be vegetarian. There's no problem. And then you have these sort of like I can't describe it. If you've got these buns that are bread, then you have like a flat sheet of dough that gets wrapped around something and maybe fried or steamed. I don't know what those are called. And then
Oh, I've not heard of that.
you have I forgot the third, but you've got another type of dumpling, which takes this. Well, you would recognize it. It's just like they're not called dumplings; they're pot stickers, is what people usually call them. And you either fry a pot sticker or you steam it. And then you have another type that takes that thin pot sticker dough and it makes a cup out of the dough, and then it puts stuff on top, and the top of it is open. So those are the at least three types of dumplings I know. That one would eat. And there's all sorts of like mystery
Oh.
and ways that you go through eating them. It's a very complex system. Talk about something that would be fun to chart. That would be a fun thing to chart out. Dumplings.
I like the steamed dumplings idea. The steamed dumplings sounds really nice.
That's right.
I mean,
Well,
they look fantastic.
that's some research for you to pursue. Dumplings. That's what you should do one weekend.
Dumplings.
All right, all right. Another,
Yes.
just another thing. What is your in photography? What is your position on this rule of like thirds or whatever?
I think I get it, but I worry about I fret about the flicker interestingness stream, as was that you the if you again this is a slightly uncanny valley in a way. If you follow the supposed rules too strictly, and you learn those rules too strictly, you end up with often quite boring photographs.
Yes.
And this surprises me. The photos I take that people comment on or people find interesting are quite often ones that I've thought to myself, shall I put this up? Shall I not put this up? I don't really mind. And I end up putting it up. And then people like it or comment on it or find it interesting in some way. So that idea that there is a sort of strict rule of there is a strict rule about if you follow these rules, you will take a good photograph. Yeah, true. But people might not like it, or people might not find it interesting. I think you can take a really good photo that's really boring.
Yeah, that's true. I like that's another good way of not summarizing, but another aspect of the boxes and arrows, as I keep saying, is you've done a perfect job, but I don't think people like it.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I do not want to see this.
All right,
Well
all right,
done.
all right. Last question, and then we'll have recommendations. Wearing
Yes.
white.
Oh. This is difficult because I am my top half is theoretically white at the moment, but it never is. It's always off-white. I don't know. I have such mixed feelings about this. I'm lost. I'm completely lost. Even though I occasionally do wear white from the top up, from the waist up, not from the waist down, but and no white socks. I don't wear white socks, but I don't know. I don't know. White t-shirt, yellow. I'm thrown. I'm completely at a loss. You don't wear white often, do
No, I agree completely. Wearing white is it just totally
you?
confuses me. And I ask that
Yes.
because here on over here in Asia or Oceania, as I like to joke, and joke in a nice way. I'm not making fun of anyone. Not this time. But that's a whole other topic. Is like if you're not being cruel, I think being made fun of is a high compliment. but most people do not think
It
that
is,
way.
yeah.
Anyways,
No.
the delightful Koreans gave us these hoodies that are white, and
Oh,
I
yeah.
just I'm just
Yeah.
it's and it's wonderful. Like I was wearing it last night because, as in all tropical climates like Singapore, they have, as they say around here, air con. And the aircon or air
Yes.
conditioning has one setting, which is fucking freezing. And so if you're inside, like really, maybe you can explain this to me because
Igloo.
you're under the metric setting. I came in and the aircon was set to 22 degrees Celsius and it was cold. So I put it up on 24 degrees Celsius, which to me doesn't seem like that big of a deal. But then the room became like hot and soupy. And so I went back and I put it back on 22 degrees. And now it's like freezing, and I feel like, does that mean 23 degrees is the optimal level? Like that can't seem to be the case. So, anyways, I was wearing this white hoodie, and one, I was concerned about eating because I'm gonna drop something on it, and then a key characteristic of wearing something white is that it can't have stains on it, which is a whole essay of Montaiguean commentary on its own. Why are we offended when white has a stain on it? But I was wearing it and I was thinking, like, I really feel like an early 90s hip hop person now wearing this white. But anyways, it gets back to like, this is a lovely hoodie, and I just like, I don't know how I can deploy it in my life. I'm very confused by it. So there you go, wearing white, a very confusing affair. Well, how about you start with the recommendations so I can think of some.
Well, I have very tedious recommendations. They're very middle of the road, as always, which is audiobooks and local library. So I've taken up listening to audiobooks, and I have discovered that there are good audiobooks and terrible audiobooks. And so I've got an Audible subscription. And I listened just as an example. I listened to like loads of them recently. I listened to an Agatha Christie story called I think it's called The Secret Adversary, and it was dreadful. It was that's that was my life. I'll never get back. It was just appalling. I thought it was awful. It's one of the worst things I've ever heard. And
Oh,
other stuff I've
poor
listened to.
Agatha. She's trying.
Oh, it's dreadful. She deserves it. Whoever she is. It's just appalling. She should retire. Keep the day job. But I listened to a John le Carré one, which was fantastic, until I realized I'd actually listened to it before. It's like, hey, I know this story. Yeah, you did. You read the book. And there's another one, a sort of a hero of mine in a way, is called Dr. Anthony Clare. And he did a series on the radio called In the Psychiatrist's Chair, where he was a psychiatrist. He died some time ago, where he interviewed people of the time, so relatively famous, and, in a kind of psychiatric mode, as it were. And they're just brilliant. They're absolutely brilliant. Like 40 minutes with like Millie or so that. And it's sort of like early 80s, I think. So it's a bit dated, but it still really hangs together. I really like that. And the local library, I have a library card, went back to the local library, borrowed some DVDs. You can borrow DVDs. They have an app where I can borrow like print publications, like the paper, that sort of stuff, for free, or for general taxation. It's fantastic. Absolutely love it. To change my life, but the I can tell you, Bridge of Spies, dreadful film. Ex Machina, don't watch it, waste of time. So
Did you say
I
Ex
oh gosh,
Machina,
it's a
the
bit.
one where there's like the lady robot?
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's terrible.
That that is that is
Didn't
that
like
is that is an odd film. Like, well,
that.
I let me correct it. That's an odd story. Like the story in it is very, very, upon reflection, it's more or less straightforward. It's the classic story of the robots taking over because we built these robots as like slaves, and we had this assumption that we could control them and we were the god. But it turns out it's not even that the robot is god. It turns out that the robot can just take you out. that the robot has power and
gonna stab you.
You've built your own destruction, which that's a classic like Greek myth. That's probably one of these Jungian sort of like stories that is encoded in our DNA. I don't really know what Jungian stuff is. I'm just pretending like it. But yeah, that is an odd movie. That's a anyway.
And yeah, and there was, and I rewatched the recent Blade Runner thing, 2049 or whatever it is,
What, yeah.
and there are a couple of scenes in there where I thought, you've put this film in front of a test and you thought there was an extra bit of blah, and you just put blah in, and it sticks out like a sore thumb. And again, with the Ex Machina thing, it's like you put this in front of a test and they want more of A and less of B, and you just did it without thinking whether it was a good idea or not. So there's one character. Why is he behaving like this? Doesn't make at all. There's no story behind it. There's no meaning behind it, and it just like, well, this isn't adding anything to this story at
Yeah, maybe that's why,
all. Just very
maybe
strange, very strange. But again,
I think you're hitting on why, like, I find it, like, I don't know what the meaning interesting is like, it's a, maybe it's a confounding story, because, like, it seems interesting, and then you're like, oh, this is just having sex with robots, right? Like, that's all that's going on here, like, which, there's all this hoity-toity, like, potential intellectualism and interesting stuff, but at the end of the day, it's just sex with robots. The old story, equally old as any Jungian story, sex
The
with robots,
old bit of sex with robots.
which I
Who
guess,
amongst us can truly say?
goes back to Greek myths. Is basically the function of Zeus in Greek myths is to have sex with robots. That's pretty much all that character does. Just let's just go bang a
Swans
cow.
and
Exactly. Yeah, and then
robots.
oddly enough, it always has. He's always changing things into animals to seduce them, which I don't know what that means. That seems like that's a deep well there. Well, you bring up a topic.
So I'm looking.
You bring
Oh
if
dear.
I can add to your area there again, your recommendation. Like, I've been struggling a lot recently, so I've been listening to I have an Audible subscription, and I've been listening to books, and I struggle with this idea that when I'm listening to a book, I should only be doing that because, if you're reading a book, you can't really multitask reading a book. It usually has your whole attention. And yet, I feel like when I'm listening to a book, I should be doing something else. Well, I could be doing something like vacuuming the
I know what
floor,
you mean.
but it is like I've been practicing on planes in particular that I'll listen to a book and I just sit there. And that's all that I concentrate on, and so much
Okay,
as you can. And I'm trying to train myself to behave the same with an audiobook as I would with a print book. And I think it's going okay. So do you
It
have you?
sounds like it's a like it's a good idea.
Do you have more recommendations, or was that it?
Oh, apart from the audiobooks I've got lined up, I've got they're almost all history of the Korean War, history of the Vietnam War. My God, they're so long. Who knew war went on for so long? It's like 20 hours of bombing and stuff. So I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be
I
great.
think if it has a good narrative thread, history books are really good. I have this one history book, speaking of going on, called I don't even remember. It's like The Hope and the Dream. It's some book like that, and it's this William Manchester book about the history of America, the US, between like 1905 and 1978 or something like that. So
Oh, okay.
it's basically right before World War I to right before Reagan, essentially. And it's fun to listen to, but there's no narrative thread. It's you can tell a journalist wrote it, because it's just like reporting on everything that happened. And it's a lot harder to listen to than something that has a narrative thread of something happening. So I would imagine, and war things are probably kind of like that, because a war has a clear narrative
Yeah, someone
thread.
wins, loses.
So those are entertaining to listen to. Well, to wrap up, let me try to condense. I'll go through two things really quickly. I was just thinking of one. I think if you go to some new locale, as I often do. I think it's fun, just like I like to go to grocery stores, it's fun to go to convenience stores and see like what their deal is. Like there's 7-Elevens are popular in this part of the world. So I was going around and there's a 7-Eleven across the street and they sell a lot of course, drinks and then, fingernail clippers and other convenience things. And then also the food selection they have is kind of interesting. Back in the States, the idea of buying a meal at a convenience store is one of the more repellent things possible. Like you don't buy food at a convenience store. But I've noticed in Europe and in Asia, people buy meals at convenience stores all the time. Like it's a proper function of a convenience store is to eat something. But then, inexplicably, there was an extensive selection of condoms and lubrication, which I don't know what that means as far as a convenience store. So, and then my second recommendation I figured out is I'm in hotels a lot, and I always waste about I mean I always worry about wasting all the toiletries. So they give you a bar soap and they give you a body wash, and I use the body wash in the shower. And so what I've been experimenting with is don't use the bar soap, only use the body wash to wash your hands. I think we have a poor internet connection, so I'm sure Robert can't hear anything. Oh. I'm just gonna wait until this works. Oh, you can. That's good. He's just texted me, audience, that he can still hear me, but I can't hear him. So then finally, speaking of hotel things, my other recommendation insofar as doing less things is you're going to go to a lot of hotels, and they're going to have this thing they call a dental kit, which is often a very nice toothbrush. And I instinctively want to take that toothbrush, but I'm thinking I'm just going to stop taking the toothbrushes because I have too many. So don't take all that stuff at the hotel. You don't need all that stuff. I saw someone going through security in Portugal, and their bag was full of a bunch of free toiletries, and I don't think you need that.
That's not so great. I even feel like
reason, never thought of leaving, got caught up achieving, got gone like the wind when it's reason, got the flow cold but no hole freezing, get it warm though when it's BOGO season, broco season, nope don't need them, took a ride to the west on some D's like the size of a breast, little old me with my tongue hanging, can't get a lick of rest, I can sleep when I'm dead, see ya mañana, me right behind ya, I'ma beat it up like Viva Pinata, need I remind ya, I'm sleep deprived of jet lag cause my team is fly,
world is on routines wild, just here waiting. Got no plans, got no schedule. Don't mean that I'm patient. The world lives on routines while I'm just here waiting. Got no plans, got no schedule. I'm patient, cool with waiting. But I just wanna ride. Would you take a ride with me? Fast, clock watching, dog walking, time's pausing. Yeah, never that.
I come to learn when it rains, it's pouring. Ain't stuff to do on them days that's boring. In a city that's oh so foreign. With a mind like, yo, I'm touring. Know the streets and the beach is gorgeous. If you need sun and trees, I'm for it. Wanna ride, little mama, I'll floor it. Pedal to the metal like a robot florist. I'm in the city like a germ in the dirt. Yeah, like I'm pretty, tell the nerd as I flirt. What I tell the hippie that's here in the
skirt, hell yeah, girl, I'm in the earth like worms. See the buckets go green when the flow mean fold me. You gon' see L's like chlorine. No need for me to lean on the city like codeine. Then there's the fair fact, you know I'm so brave. That's why I can't grind like that. Take hella drive to go buy on raps. Hell if I'm gonna go right back like hello mind if I blow my stacks on midday. Okay, we gon' make do to the crave, moving okay when we came through. Now it's all changed, no blame. Wanna ride too, I'm the guy boo. If you straight, what you drop through?
World is on routines, why? Just here waiting. Got no plans, got no schedule. Don't mean that I'm patient. The world lives on routines while I'm just here waiting. Got no plans, got no schedule. I'm patient, cool with waiting, but
I just wanna ride. Would you take a
I just wanna ride.